some questions I've received via the internet.
Long story of my life from Sergei in Taganrog, Russia. I don't know if that's the right pronunciation. Hare Krishna. He writes, I have a problem concerning the purity and contamination of prasadam and consciousness. It began with the fact that after taking prasadam at public programs, namharta, bhakti vriksha, Sunday feasts in the temple, my material desires increase. Images not related with Krishna appear in my mind, and in dreams, images of militants, horror, and erotics appear. In dreams, I sometimes was strangled, maltreated, raped, etc. It's from a male. Because of this, I felt I had to endeavor more to follow sadhana, concentrate while chanting and reading. I was advised not to take prasadam at public programs because the standards of cleanliness are very low. Thus, I visited the programs but did not take prasadam, and this seemed to solve the problem. After that, at some point, I decided to live in the temple to dedicate more time to service in the hope that it would be easier to practice, but it turned out to be the opposite. After 1.5 months, my material desires and dreams became very strong, stronger than at home. I returned home, and senior devotees, brahmacharis who live outside the temple, what does that mean, brahmacharis who live outside the temple, sent me charanamrita and sent me prasadam until I recovered. I thought that this was related with aparads that I had unconsciously made. Now I'm in another city and visiting another temple, and after taking prasadam there, my bad dreams and images again manifest. I have the understanding that this is because of the low standards of cleanliness of preparation. Prasadam not cooked by brahmanas, distributors' hands dirty, dirty clothes. Anyone can take a dispensable plate with dirty hands or serve themselves prasadam from the vessels. I also myself need to be cleansed. Do these low standards of cleanliness in cooking and distribution of prasadam influence the enthusiasm of devotees in their service? On the other hand, I see how many devotees live in temples and practice sadhana, and that's why I have a doubt that it could be tricks of my mind not to live in the temple. Or maybe I should live in the temple but cook for myself. Please help me to get an understanding of purity standards. Is external cleanliness important? Can prasadam be contaminated? Can it affect the mind and its thoughts and images? Can it affect the desire to serve Sri Guru, Prabhupada, Krishna and devotees? Maybe I should concentrate on chanting, do more practical service, distribute books, and maybe I should pay less attention to things that I pay attention to now as they are not so important. Well, there's a whole bundle of topics there from someone with a very disturbed mind, it seems. And to have such a disturbed mind is common and practically symptomatic of Kali Yuga. As stated in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, I believe it's the 11th verse of 18,000 verses, describing the symptoms of Kali Yuga. Prayana alpayusha sabya kalavasmin yuga janaha manda sumanda matiyo manda bhaga hi upadruta. O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, people have but short lives. That's the first symptom. Prayana alpayusha. Mostly they have short lives. They are unlucky of manda, sumanda, and very bad, intelligent, lazy. And the main symptom of Kali Yuga is that people's minds are disturbed. This is very prominent in the Western countries. In this area, we can say the Indian cultural area. Of course, this is Sri Lanka, but it's especially those of you who are from a Hindu background and Buddhist also. It's the same culture. in so far people's minds in general, we can say they're not as grossly disturbed as is common in the Western world. Doesn't mean that you're all saints, that you're all walking Paramahamsas, but the level of mental disturbance that is, and of course it's not everyone in the West, but it's quite common that mental disease, I'm going to speak on that in another lecture, thanks from this book you showed me. It's very common in the modern age, and that's got as I understand from Shastric vision, that's a lot to do with culture also, and the whole way of life, especially in the Western world, is very strongly centered on sense gratification. Very, very strongly. And we learn from Bhagavad Gita that Dhyayato Vishayan Pungsang Sangasteshu Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kamat Krodha Pajayate Krodhat Bhavati Sammoha Sammohat Smriti Vibhramaha Smriti Brangshad Buddhi Nasho Buddhi Nashat Pranashati. It's very important analysis. So much in Bhagavad Gita you study, there's so much we can understand. Important things we have to understand from this. In these two verses, Lord Krishna says that by meditating on the, by always thinking about how I can enjoy, then karma, material desire increases. Dhyayato vishayam pumsang sangasteshu. One becomes attached, one's mind becomes attached to the thought of enjoying through the senses. And from that comes krodha. Now, krodha is usually translated as anger, but it covers also frustration, then in anger, krodha, one's mind becomes bewildered and one forgets what you're supposed to be doing in your human life. Intelligence becomes spoiled and then everything is spoiled. So the whole problem begins with sense gratification. But in the Western countries especially, the sense gratification is pushed very strongly in a very gross way through. And of course, it's everywhere now. Through the internet, there's pornography and so many bad things. Most people in the Western countries, and increasingly here also, they haven't understood that there's anything wrong with the organized torture and slaughter of millions of animals just for the pleasure of the tongue. It's a gross blot. Kalanka. Blot. Blot means kalanka, literally. Do you have that word, kalanka? Yeah. Kalankam. It means stain. Literally means a stain. On the whole civilization. There's one incident related, Srila Prabhupada, in 1967, preaching among the hippies in San Francisco, where there was a young woman. Now, in this part of the world, when we think of young women, we think of somewhat reserved. But in the West, especially in that hippie culture, they may be completely wild. So, taking drugs and having sex left, right, and center with no fixed partner. So one girl said to Prabhupada, "What can I do about my mind?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Chant Hare Krishna." And she went on and on, "My mind, my mind, my mind." Prabhupada said, "It is the darkest. It is the darkest of the deepest dark. It's so. Srila Prabhupada had come from Vrindavan, came to the Western world where people's minds are so disturbed. So, like I say, it's not everyone in the Western world and who's so deeply disturbed. And it's not that everyone in Sri Lanka or India is a saint, but in general we can say the culture there is low, actually. In terms of Vedic understanding, it's very low culture. And people's very deeply disturbed mind is not unusual. Like this. So this devotee is right. He's trying to become a devotee. And there are many people who are trying to be devotees, but they struggle very much with the uncontrolled mind. One reason people may take to Krishna consciousness in the Western countries especially is because they feel their mind is so disturbed. They feel they want some relief from that. The common relief from that is, in America at least, is to give drugs. The word Prozac is a household word. Everyone in America knows the word Prozac. It's a kind of drug that's given to antidepressant. But it's so well known, there are millions of people take it daily. So that's the common thing, to give drugs. And they used to do psychotherapy, but it takes a long time and it costs a lot of money. And now they just give a drug. That's all. And there's some other lithium, something like that. When I was a child, it used to be for the housewives used to take Valium. That was the name. That was the common one. There's even a song about that. Looking for the shelter of a mother's little helper. Remember that? Maybe that's before your time. Though she's not really ill, there's a little yellow pill. And goes on like that. So, this is a letter from someone who's trying to be a devotee, but is very disturbed in mind. And there have been many cases of that. I was only in Krishna consciousness, or something. I was only in the Krishna consciousness movement for about 2 years in the West before I came to India, and have subsequently been based in India all that time. But in that time, I saw several people join the movement, and then just because their mind is so disturbed, they couldn't stay. I won't relate some of this, so you may be shocked, some of the things. Just the mind is too disturbed. They can't live in an ashram. Or they can't maintain the principles. Just too disturbed. And sometimes we have to turn people away because they want to be Krishna conscious, but they just can't. They can't control their mind enough even to practice basic sadhana. So, you're fortunate in that respect. I think you're not in that category, those of you who are coming here. Take advantage of the opportunity. Of course, Maya takes many forms, and it may not be very gross here, but there are other. Maya comes in the form of very strong family attachment, which also helps to stop the fact that there's good family bonding. That also that helps to stop the more gross aspects of craziness. But it gives another kind of Maya. So Maya is Bahurupini. She has many forms. And if you think, now I'm free from Maya in one way, and then she's catching you another way. So be careful. Therefore, what shall we do? Kirtaniya Sadaharihi. Always chant the holy names. Always be engaged in Krishna service. It is possible to be in Maya even when you're chanting Hare Krishna, if you're not really chanting. If you're thinking, oh, I'm chanting very nicely. Oh, it's so. Oh, people appreciate. You have to be careful if you have a nice voice and people like your singing. Maya is so subtle. She can catch us gross and subtle in every way she can catch us, unless we take shelter of Krishna fully. So this devotee says, I feel after taking prasadam that I, at a public program, it may be the person who's cooking it is not in very good consciousness, or it's not very clean, and therefore I feel my consciousness is badly affected. Now, there is grounds to consider like that. There's the famous verse in Bhagavad Gita, the Patrang Pushpang Palang Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadahang Bhakti Paharitamash Nami Prayatatmanaha. It's a well-known verse. So I think you all, Patram, you can understand what it means. Pushpam, Palam, Toyam means water. It's not a very common word in modern Indian languages for water. In North India they say Pani, which I think that's from Urdu, but Jalam, or Tirtham in High Tamil, otherwise Thani. In Telugu you have Niru. Jal, I said that, yeah. This is a common one. So there are different words. Toya is one word for water. So yo me yaha means he who, me unto me, bhaktya in bhakti. So it's easy to understand. But this word prayatatmanaha, what does that mean? You probably... It's not so easy to... It's not obvious as patram, pushpam. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary on this verse, it means following all the rules and regulations. That means actually to cook for Krishna, one should be very clean. One should be clean in consciousness. That's why in the temples... only those who are brahminically initiated, they can cook. And to be brahminically initiated means that one should be following, practicing Krishna consciousness very strictly. They're very careful standards of cleanliness. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described how Raghava Pandit, a great devotee, have you read this? You read in Chaitanya Charitamrita? He's a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So his servant would bring some coconuts. He got the best coconuts from a long distance at a high price. And his servant was bringing the coconuts in. They were to be cut and offered. As the servant came in the door, he touched the door frame and then again touched the coconuts. And Raghava Pandit said, throw the coconuts away, because he touched the door frame. And why? If you touch the floor, then you can understand that that becomes contaminated. But he thinks that people are coming in and out of the door and the dust goes up and touches that, and you touch this and now you touch that, therefore it's unfit to offer. So strict. Nowadays we purchase from the bazaar, and the people in the bazaar, we don't know. They're eating meat and so many things. It's best to grow food ourselves and offer it to Krishna. But in a city like this, that's not possible. Anyway, there are standards, and these should be maintained. And Krishna says, "I will accept." And one of the things is if it's offered with love, but one of the factors of love is that you prepare it very carefully. It's just like if you go in a McDonald's. I presume there's McDonald's here in Colombo, and I presume that none of you go there. But for people who go there, you can't expect that the food is going to be served with love. At home, if your mother is cooking, then she's cooking and she's serving. There's an exchange of love. But if you go to the cafe, then it's just take it, give the money, blah, 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 blah. And it's just a physical function. There's no exchange of love. So Krishna says, I will accept if it's offered with love. But if there's love, then there's also the mother's cooking, she wants to see it's clean, it's served nicely. So if you say, well, I'm serving with love, but I didn't bother to wash any of the vegetables, so there's all, when you're eating, there's pieces of dirt, and especially in the green vegetables, the shark, if you don't wash it properly, then you get break your teeth while you're eating. So there are rules and regulations to be followed also. And if it's not offered with love and Krishna doesn't accept it, and if it's not cooked in a manner that is very clean, the person should be of clean consciousness, and Krishna doesn't accept. We can go and buy some bread from the shop and stick it in front of a picture of Krishna and mumble some mantras and say, okay, it's prasadam. But Krishna's not obliged to accept that. Once in Melbourne, in Australia, devotee was cooking there, who subsequently has become the most famous cook in ISKCON, Kurma Prabhu. There are other famous cooks, Yamuna, but she's also famous. Maybe Kurma is the most famous. Apurva is another great name of cooking. Not so well known in America. Anyway, once Srila Prabhupada was served prasadam, and he very much appreciated it. He called the cook, who was Kurma, and he said, thank you for following all the rules and regulations very strictly. He could understand, because actually Kurma also, he does. He's very careful in following all the rules and everything. He's a very, apart from being a great cook, he's also a very good, solid devotee in following his sadhana and all these things. Another time, I don't know exactly the where and when, but Jananda Maharaj told me this, that once, it was concerning in 1974, I believe it was, at Bhaktivedanta Manor, among the devotees, there was some quarreling, and when Srila Prabhupada came, this was brought to Srila Prabhupada's attention, he said, who is the cook? Srila Prabhupada traced it. He thought that would be an influence. If the cook's mind is not clean, then what the devotees are taking, that won't be... that effect may be there. So it is a consideration. And often at public festivals, we just get anyone to cook and somehow or other get things cooked. But it used to be, just like in the big Rath Yatra in San Francisco, this would be from the late 1960s, it served 20,000 people, which in the West is a huge thing. I mean, even in India and Sri Lanka, it's not a small thing. But the devotees would do all the cooking. They wouldn't hire anyone. And even at Kumbh Mela, where Srila Prabhupada had his own disciple for public distribution, he's not talking about for the devotees, it was Revati Nandan Swami and others, they were doing the cooking. Srila Prabhupada did allow that there could be hired cooks, but on principle he didn't like it. Sometimes he allowed it. Quite often Srila Prabhupada would ask, you bring me some of the prasadam that's been offered to the deities and devotees. He would see, what's the quality. He was concerned that the deities and the devotees get quality prasadam. Quality means... generally we think quality means you throw in a bucket of ghee and that's good quality, but that's not correct. That's a good cook, even with just a touch of ghee, can cook very can cook very well. And a bad cook, even with lots of ghee, they'll mess it up. Someone who doesn't know what they're doing properly. In fact, one of the things is to put too much ghee. In some preparations, a lot of ghee is called for, but not on a day-to-day basis. I remember I cooked once in London. It was some festival. I cooked a feast, and I cooked this brinjal preparation. I can't remember the name. Bingan. I can't remember. Anyway, you cook it with bingan and tomatoes and lots of ghee. And everything was very nice, and all the devotees took a lot. And the next day we went for Harinam Sankirtan, and everyone's voice was completely... There was no strength because they'd all eaten so much ghee. They said they all blame me. That just came to my mind. It popped up, boom, out of nowhere. Once in Africa, Srila Prabhupada, they brought him some prasadam, just boiled food with no spice. Prabhupada said, this is not prasadam. He said, it's dog food. Of course, dogs don't eat boiled vegetables, but Prabhupada was giving the idea. It's not up to, this is not the proper standard. So the quality is important. And this devotee said sometimes he goes to public festivals and this, and he doesn't take prasadam. I know some devotees also who they go to some function and they see who's cooking and they may not take it because it's just put out there as because we have to feed and they say, well, it's prasad, but it's not. It's quite a common thing to nowadays just buy something from the shop and offer it and call it prasadam, but that's not going to change people's hearts. Real prasadam, which is cooked with love by serious devotees, it purifies the consciousness, and non-devotees become devotees by taking it. But it may be that even devotees, they become maybe not non-devotees, but the consciousness can be influenced by food that's not very not cooked by people in very good consciousness. Srila Prabhupada in India, he would often take his disciples to take prasadam in the house of life members. And he said this is a preaching, as a preaching function. And devotees asked him about that well, we're making life members and we have to take with them. Prabhupada said that's one of the austerities of preaching. You may not think it's an austerity because generally they feed you very nicely, but I know myself because I was doing that sometimes in England, actually, visiting life, making people life members, and then they expect you to take, and it's an austerity because even though it's very nice food, but very well cooked, and served with affection also, but because they're not devotees following the principles, it affects the consciousness. It's not the same as taking prasad cooked by devotees who are seriously following. Even though these are very pious people, these are mostly we're taking from in the house of Gujaratis from Africa at that time. And actually very, very pious people. And we come from a very impious background, but still we could see that. So it is a factor. At the same time, this Sergi is saying that I have all these bad dreams and everything. Well, that may not be happening to everyone. So it's something in you also. So that everyone who goes to the program, they eat, and then they all become, they have dreams of violence and erotica and all this. It probably doesn't happen to everyone. So it may be something in yourself also. So, in general, it's a very important principle that among our devotees, we should have prasadam cooked by devotees who are properly following. It makes a difference. So that is important. We were just discussing about hiring a cook and this and that, but I wasn't very supportive of that. I know, I said, we used to go on Sankirtan parties and we'd cook ourselves. We'd have maybe six devotees, we'd cook. I mean, in India, that's the standard thing. Everyone cooks. It's not that, well, we're too busy. Traditionally, everyone would cook. Nowadays, they may go to a restaurant or something. In a holy place, if you're visiting, then you can, that's a common thing. You can, if you're just visiting with a small group, two, three, then you may ask in a temple, you approach them in the morning and ask them to cook some extra, you give them something, that may be done. But in general, if we're traveling regularly, then we cook ourselves. I remember also in traveling Sankirtan in England, there were just three or four I used to cook. Otherwise, the devotees were just taking dried fruit and milk. But I said, I'll take an extra hour and cook something simple. But let's have something cooked. So, it is important. But maybe this devotee himself is particularly affected because of his mind is like that, is particularly disturbed. What to do? What to do if the devotees themselves don't keep up a very good standard of cleanliness? He's talking about those who they've eaten and then they serve themselves. This is all nonsense. This should be stopped. Prasadam should be served. Not self-service. And there's a whole culture. This Krishna conscious culture is pleasing to Krishna and to everyone who participates in it. And it's also purifying. If we don't follow that culture, then we can't expect the same level of purification. So he's asking what exactly I should do. Should I move in the temple and this and that? I don't know you well enough to... I mean, I don't know you at all. So it's difficult for me to say. Better you take advice from someone who knows you well. Although if they're all at that level where they're all serving themselves without washing their hands, there may be not anyone to give... But anyway, what you've said, concentrate on chanting, do more practical service, distribute books, these things are always purifying. Distribute books, well, we have to see actually who's distributing books. They should be on some good level themselves because they have to represent our movement to the public. So if they don't know how to conduct themselves properly, maybe they shouldn't distribute books, but everyone can go on Harinam Sankirtan, do more service, do more chanting like this. But if you feel too much affected, then you may not live in the ashram, you may live outside and just come. It's not that everyone has to live in the ashram. Living in the ashram means a deep level of commitment, and even if one is prepared to commit, it has to be seen whether he's fit, because you may want to commit, but then due to previous conditioning, the mind may be too disturbed. One has to be very peaceful to live among devotees. Peaceful conscious means ready to cooperate with others, ready to follow all the rules, rising early, and following all these things. So, Hare Krishna, there's a few thoughts on that. You want to cook for yourself? Well, if your mind's so disturbed, you're going to help yourself? It's like people, they I'm looking for a guru who's completely pure and won't cheat me. Well, look at yourself. How pure are you? Are you going to cheat yourself? If you want to be cheated, then Krishna will send you a cheater. If we work on, yes, I really want to dedicate myself to Krishna, then Krishna will send us the guidance. If we look in our own hearts. Okay, Hare Krishna. I'll not speak about this more now. If there are any questions about this, I could take that. Can you like to ask? You can ask in Tamil and that can be translated. Also. Yeah, speak.
Speak louder. Sometimes we have bad consciousness. So, can we avoid cooking or as a service, okay, nobody is there, we have to cook. That way we can go on cooking.
Yeah, our consciousness goes up and down. There may be a devotee who has the service of cooking. But generally the cook has a regulated schedule. So it shouldn't go up and down too much. And often the consciousness goes up and down if we're not very regulated and this and that. It's good to chant rounds before cooking, if possible. Often cooks, because they may have to start early in the morning. So in that case, I know myself, when I was after Mangal Arati, I'd go in the kitchen and cook. This was in London before I came to stay in India. Then I'd get up early and chant most of my rounds before Mangal Arati. It was very nice. I'd chant most of my rounds, then offer Mangal Arati, and then chant just a few rounds. Then I'd go in the kitchen and cook for the deities and devotees. It was very nice. But it may be consciousness goes up and down. But you can't tell, okay, I'm not cooking today. We have to go on. Keep regular sadhana. If we keep regular sadhana, that is the minimal standard. If we're not even chanting 16 rounds, then we shouldn't even be living in the ashram. It can be difficult. Householders, their babies are crying, keeping them awake at night. It's difficult to chant their rounds. That's a special austerity of householders. You may think someone becomes a brahmachari, it's very austere, but actually to have children can be a very difficult thing. Everyone has different austerities. Yeah, any other question? Yes, please.
Say it loudly. Sometimes we can't continue the rounds, like the left rounds we are continuing the next day. So how it affect?
Yeah, it's a common question. I wish it wasn't a common question. It shouldn't be a regular practice. Srila Prabhupada allowed that if someone is very busy, and that some days may happen, if in festivals, then rounds we go behind, then you have to make them up the next day. There may be a 3-day festival, and then, or you're sick. And you can't chant, and then you So you have to chant later. When I first joined, I'm telling a few anecdotes from my early days here. When I first joined in Bhaktivedanta Mana, one devotee was there, Kripa Moy Prabhu, who's a well-known devotee in ISKCON in England today. Most of the brahmacharis would go out on traveling sankirtan, but he didn't go. And I saw he was just chanting all day. I was just new, completely new. So I said, how come you're just chanting all day? Most of the devotees, they chant in the morning and then they do different services. He said, well, I was sick and I'm just recovering, so I have so many rounds to catch up on. I still remember the way he chants, the intonation and everything. So that may be, but it's not good to make a habit of it. It's a good policy to not rest at night before chanting your rounds. But then, one has to be apply some dadami buddhi yogam tam, take intelligence from Krishna what to do also. For instance, if you have to rise early the next morning and drive, then it's better to take rest on time rather than driving into a lamppost the next morning. So, how to balance all these things? Take intelligence from Krishna. Yeah, anything else?
Now you were talking about expecting, about your mind get disturbed at a certain point. Where there's expectations of a human being, that a lot of needs and wants, right? When the expectation is there, even while chanting or while praying, you wanted that expectation to come true. And sometimes that disturbs.
What do you mean? Could you give an example?
Expectation of achieving something.
Oh, you see, people are behind you that you have to become a great success or something like that, is it? And you're thinking of that even while you're chanting.
I mean, certain people who I've spoken to have this type of issue where when they chant, certain people wanted that expectation to become true.
Oh, I see, they're chanting for some material desire. Well, you can chant like that, but the real way to chant is to chant so that we can get love of Krishna. Because material desires may be fulfilled, but there's no end to them. You'll never be satisfied. And nor will anyone else be satisfied. Just like if people are behind you to become a material success, you get to one level and they say, okay, go up more. There's no end to it. So real chanting means na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam, va jagadisha, kameye, mama janmani, janmani, shvare, bhavatad, bhakti, rahaitu, kitve. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to chant, not praying for money, not praying for fame and power and followers, not praying for a beautiful wife, not praying to become a great intellectual, but just not even praying for moksha, for liberation, but only praying, may I be your servant, Krishna. That's all. That's pure prayer. So that will satisfy Krishna and that will satisfy us. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaya haitukya pratihata yayatma supersedati. The best dharma for everyone is that way by which Krishna is satisfied. But that has to be without any personal expectation. If you use that word, expectation. Not what I can get from it. Just let us please Krishna. And fully dedicated. And that will please us. It will please Krishna. It will please us. That's the real way to chant. And that... That's really the difference between this Krishna consciousness that we're preaching and Hinduism in general or religion in general. We're saying, we're preaching, give yourself fully to Krishna in love. Not give us this day our daily bread. Not praying for anything. You, God, give me this, give me that. But only praying, let me serve you without any personal desire. This attitude is bhakti, pure devotion. So I don't think anyone is preaching that. In general, if you go to the churches or the temples, no one is preaching that. And if we take up this principle, then we become happy on a completely different platform. You can see our devotees. They're bright. Why is that? They don't eat meat. They don't watch TV. They don't. They're not aspiring to be a big material success. Only they're living very simply, chanting Hare Krishna. Their life is dedicated to Krishna. And they become fully happy. That's called Atmasukh, Atmananda, the happiness of the soul. You won't get that from any material expectation. That just expectation leads to frustration. That's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Durashaya. Wrong kind of expectation. Nate vidu swartagatingi vishnum durashaya bahiratamaninas. Tipishatantram urudamni badha. What's the last line? Maya sukhaya baramudvatavimur. Now I'm getting mixed up with verses. Anyway, the people who do not know that the real goal of life is to worship Vishnu, they have many desires, but those desires just bind them more and more in material life. But you may say, well, everyone's like that. Yeah, but everyone means we're following. But it's like one blind man, he catches hold of another blind man and says, oh, now I can follow him. So blind following the blind. So we should come to the light. What is that? Utishta, jagrata, prapya, varang, nibodhata. Get up, wake up, become aware of what is the opportunity in this human form of life. So, anything else? No, I don't understand the question. I can understand you're saying that some devotees are initiated, but they're not following properly now. But what's the question, actually? Yes, say in Tamil and it may be translated. What should be our approach to devotees who've gone away and not following? Well, we should try to help them to come back to the proper standard. It's better that we screen those before they take initiation. But even if we screen them, some will go away, it seems. Some devotees, their guru left. Yeah, well. Who's that in Sri Lanka? I don't think. Maybe. Anyway. We should try to help them. That's the basic thing. Yeah, you had a question? Your own realization is that if you're really trying to help someone and you take food from them or some juice or something, yeah, you'd be protected. Right, right. That's a common thing. Devotees would go in the they'd go in bars and on the beaches where the people are hardly dressed at all. But if you're fully absorbed in Sankirtan, trying to bring Krishna consciousness to others, then you're protected. I've been reading these accounts of Indradyumna Maharaj, and he goes on the beaches in the west with Harinam Sankirtan, been doing it for years. But there's never been any sign of him being, you know, affected adversely in that way. So yeah, some protection is there. But be careful also. Just like in the early days of our movement in England, devotees, they were being paid to do Harinam Sankirtan in nightclubs. Because it was something new. And there was the Hare Krishna mantra had become very popular as a kind of entertainment. But then after some time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he describes that in his book, Servant of the Servant. And taking advice from Prabhupada, he stopped doing that because it's a drain on the devotees. Their late nights and very worst kind of atmosphere. So even though they're chanting Hare Krishna, but you know, clubs full of smoke and drunken people, and they're just going there to men to meet women, and lowest kind of con. Usually they're quite dark and everything. It used to be in the early days of the movement that devotees would go out regularly on Harinam Sankirtan, especially in Los Angeles and San Francisco. They go out late at night. Because all the tourists would come and they'd do a lot of Harinam at night. And then Srila Prabhupada introduced the morning program. That wasn't there in the beginning days of the movement. He started 4:30, Mangalarti. Then devotees stopped going out late at night. In Bombay also, because our temple is in Juhu. At that time it was just under construction. And devotees would go into the city, and to go to the city would take an hour down to Nariman Point. They'd go down there to collect funds for building the temple. And devotees would regularly come late, but Srila Prabhupada said, no, you should come back by 5 o'clock. He said, and come to the evening program. He said, otherwise you'll become like karmis. Doesn't leave you much time. If you have the morning program, and then if you're lucky, if you can get out at 9 o'clock, and then if you have to be back by 5, mostly devotees wouldn't get out by that early. So it doesn't leave much time. But Prabhupada said you should come back. So Srila Prabhupada, he pushed devotees in preaching, but he was very protective also. That you have to have your sadhana. In one letter, Srila Prabhupada wrote a whole letter about preaching, and you'll get so many realizations. And at the end, the last line of the letter, and the highest realization is to save yourself. So, anything else? Otherwise, all right then. I'm not very favorable with the concept of paid cooks. Well, I did quote Srila Prabhupada about that. It's not just something that popped out of my head. Srila Prabhupada allowed it in India, not in the West. But on the whole, he didn't encourage it. That's the summary, we could say. In the Western world, we regularly pay devotees to cook in the restaurants. Our devotee restaurants. They're mostly grihasthas. They need to support a family. So it's, and even you can't, even if they're going to cook there according to law, you have to pay them and they have this and that. So that's quite acceptable to have paid devotees working in the restaurants. Oh, we were just discussing that, having young men who are not married as cooks pay. It's not, if they're devotees, it's acceptable, but it's not the best. Best is if everyone does devotional service without any, devotional service means without pay, but It often in the student hostels that devotees run in India, some devotees are paid to cook. They want some money for their families. It's not first class, but it's something practical. It's not the worst. It's definitely a lot better than just hiring anyone. Better would be if our own devotees were cooked, but anyway, for whatever reason, it's like that. Best if, just like I gave the example at the Rath Yatra in San Francisco, Kumbh Mela, like this. So, Hare Krishna, thank you for coming.